Hello. This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 25th of April. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by my husband, Tom Williams. And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. And your readers today are Michael Wyard.
Hello.
Maria Head.
Hello.
And Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
The main headlines this week are Swindling School Bursar Given Suspended Jail Term, Saddling Up for Heroes, and Don't Divert Boomtown Traffic Through Our Village. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Michael?
Swindling School Bursar Given Suspended Jail Term. An ex-bursar of a special school sobbed as a judge imposed an 18-month suspended jail sentence on her for swindling £18,000 in faked overtime claims. Linda Whittaker clutched a tissue to her face, when told she had been rumbled for dishonestly submitting timesheets for her friend Patricia Hickman at Osborne School in Winchester between 2008 and 2010. Judge Jane Miller, QC, said her teacher Sonia O'Donnell had been told that Hickman's work was voluntary, even though it was being secretly claimed for. "Together, you manipulated the system. The claims were put in an underhand manner," she said. "I have doubts that the work was ever worked by her. There should have been a second person in the dock with you." The court was told how Whittaker attempted suicide after the jury returned a guilty verdict on one of the two counts for which she was tried in February. She was acquitted of fraudulently claiming £54,000 in overtime payments from Hampshire County Council for herself. Judge Miller said, "A high degree of trust had been breached. You were the school bursar, and you ran the finances. All these timesheets were authorised by you, or not at all." However, pre-sentence reports presented to the court showed that Whittaker, who is actually pictured in this piece, of Loveden Lane, Kingsworthy, suffered from depression and anxiety and was prone to panic attacks. "I have accepted that your health is not good, particularly the psychiatric report. I have accepted that this would make custody very hard, very hard," said Judge Miller, as she ordered the 66-year-old to do 200 hours community service. "I am told that you are suitable for unpaid work. It may be even therapeutic for you." Defence Counsel David Reed said in mitigation that Whittaker had found it hard to cope with the demands of her job as bursar, and this was her first conviction. The trial was told how she was in charge of a budget of £2 million, was clerk to the Board of Governors, and often worked beyond the contractual 37 hours a week. But when auditors visited the school in September 2010 to check financial records and timesheets were found to be missing from the archives. The public gallery was full of Whittaker's supporters, who embraced her as she continued weeping after the sentencing. Osborne School in the Andover Road declined to comment after the verdict. The court heard how Ms. Hickman is not being pursued by Hampshire County Council for the £18,000 overtime payments that she received as a result of the fraud.
Saddling up for heroes. A Winchester mum of four is gearing up for the challenge of a lifetime that will remember fallen soldiers of World War I. Barbara Raymond, 47, from Stanmore, will ride 340 miles from Brussels to Paris as part of the big battlefield bike ride in June. around 300 cyclists, both able-bodied and wounded service personnel, will take on the challenge that stops off at different memorial and battlegrounds along the way. The taxi driver will ride in aid of Help for Heroes, a charity close to her heart, as her grandfather worked alongside Gurkha soldiers as a chindit in Burma during World War II. My granddad was an absolute hero, she said. My grandparents brought me up with the whole mindset that there is nothing in this world that we can't do if we are determined to do it. In a twist of fate, she lives on Wavell Way, which was named after General Archibald Wavell, one of the creators of the Chindit Regiment in which her grandfather served. To get ready for the trip, she held a fundraising bike ride at Sainsbury's in Badger Farm and raised a further £449.03 towards her £2,600 target.
Don't divert boomtown traffic through our village. Hundreds of coaches and campervans could use a Winchester village as a rat run to get to a summer festival, residents fear. Villagers have branded the proposals to the use country lanes as desperately unsafe. Boomtown organisers want to see 75 coaches and up to 750 campervans directed from the M3 through Twyford and onward to Matterley Bowl this summer. The plan is to direct them through Twyford, onto Hazley Road, through Morstead and past Uttlebury via Longwood Road to the A272. At a residents' meeting last Thursday, festival officials met parish councillors, residents, police and city councillors. Daryl Henry, a parish councillor for Twyford, said, "The biggest issue I have is the actual entrance of the junction. You're talking about putting 75 coaches and 750 campervans through that area, which is desperately unsafe." Tom Ferris of CTM Traffic Management said, "I appreciate the concerns you have had with traffic coming through your village more than you have had previously, but it's about spreading the traffic. I know this isn't great for you, but if we can push coach movement into the long term by generating new routes in what we can reduce the numbers of cars but still extend the number of people." Festival officials hope to increase the number of visitors from 30,000 to 38,000 this year, with a further increase to 45,000 next year and 49,999 in 2016. This year's event will be on August the 7th to the 10th. But Boomtown was criticised for not relaying the information sooner. Winchester City Councillor Robert Humby said, "It's not how you intend to manage it, it's about the consultation with residents and businesses, and that has been unfortunate. We need to make sure these lines of communication are let out very clearly. We live here and we won't know the area." City Council officers of the Environment Division and Hampshire Police said assessing new routes was vital to ease congestion on the A31. Sergeant Jason Holford, who works in strategic operations for Hampshire Constabulary, said, "In the last 2 or 3 years, we've talked about the pressure on Junction 9. It's always been a problem. But parish councils and residents said the proposals would not be safe and raised concerns of the logistics of turning such large and numerous vehicles into Hazley Road." One resident, Sue Padwick, aged 63 and retired, of Hazley Road, said, "I'm not impressed. It's bad enough along this road as it is without extra traffic. If that much traffic is on the road, we won't be able to get out of the driveway because it'll come to a standstill at some point. I won't be able to cope with it. Another 41-year-old IT consultant, Scott Johnson, said, "This road is usually fairly quiet, and the place we are here is on a blind bend as you come up from 60 to a 30-mile-an-hour limit. Buses are not so much a problem, but obviously it will be a country road with fast traffic and so potentially very dangerous." A resident of Longwood Road, who didn't want to be named, said, "No way. I think it's just ridiculous. With all the cyclists, riders and walkers, it would be a nightmare. I just can't see the purpose. However, another resident of Longwood Road said, it's not going to affect us as much. If it happens over a weekend, then there's no problem. The traffic management plan will be decided a month before the festival begins.
Here are the death notices, and it's a very short list this time. They are Giles, Gordon Giles of Alsford, aged 72. Banks, Thomas Edward Banks, peacefully. White, Georgina White, after a long illness, aged 88. And Ralph, Derek Robert Ralph. And that is all the deaths this week. Now we go to Brian, please, for Christian comment.
And that is headed Easter, a call to be peacemakers. O back our King and Easter in us. These words of the poet Gerard Manley Hopkins cry out today as amidst the commercial trappings of bunnies and chocolate. Christians follow the cross to the Calvary, renew faith that risen Christ will bring hope to a world still broken with conflict. How different it is approaching resurrection here in relatively comfortable Hampshire than away from many conflict-ridden countries in the world. David Alton spoke last week of the West ignoring the systematic killing and outright persecution of Christians in the Middle East. Religious leaders, Pope Francis, Cardinal Vincent Nichols and the Archbishop of Canterbury, all pleaded for peace in their Easter messages. The Pope's Good Friday meditations reflected on women and children who have been abused, desperate migrants, and those who have lost their jobs through financial crisis. But of all the situations crying out for redemption, it's the plight of the Syrian people that strikes the deepest chord. The recent report of the visit of Reverend Andrew Ashdown, vicar of Enim Halamain, near Andover, reflects this desperation. Most of all, my heart goes out to the people of Syria, who are experiencing unimaginable levels of suffering and yearn for peace. Many we met were openly critical of the government regime, but all are unanimous in their condemnation of the rebels, who everyone reports are mostly controlled by external extremists imposing a reign of terror and brutality. Yesterday morning, rebel mortars hit two schools in the Christian quarter of Damascus, where I was on Sunday. One child has been killed and 65 injured. Such levels of suffering challenge us to question the meaning of resurrection. We are stopped from glib assumptions that now that Lent is over, we return to our old ways of living unchanged. The Easter joy brings an end to all discipline and austerity. Yes, an end to conflict in Syria and the Middle East is complex. But what did Jesus say in his post-resurrection appearances? I go before you to Galilee. Galilee, where the proclamation of the kingdom of God began and where it must now be resumed. Easter truth and peace are not delivered instantaneously. Easter is a challenge to be followed by all. In a sense, this is the Guatemalan poet Julia Esquivel's wrote, we are threatened with resurrection. Threatened by a call to each of us to be peacemakers, to begin a new journey. No wonder the poet cried, O back our King and Easter in us, so the kingdom will be a reality.
Now we have letters to the editor, and the first letter's read by Michael.
This letter comes from Derek Pickett, who is chairman of the Wessex Society, and it's headed, Roman Wall Just Wasn't Wanted. Sir, so the Roman wall is rubble. Doesn't it say in the Bible that we should grieve for a loved one for a season and then move on as best we can? How much less for the loss of this part of our heritage? Those in charge of this vandalism have been castigated on the front page, in the editorial column, and, most of all, on the letters page. All to no avail. Our leader's argument for the levelling contained more holes than the jumbly sieve. Yet the responsibility ultimately rests with the people of Winchester. And let's face it, they didn't want to keep it. Derek Pickett.
Eric Horn also writes about the Roman War. Why all that fuss over a few bricks? Sir, why all that fuss about a bit of Roman wall? After all, what happened to the rest of the South Gate, North Gate and East Gate? The West Gate only remains by the chance that someone recognised its importance when the HCC offices were built. Just imagine if that had gone as well. And the King's Gate, inconveniently, has a church upstairs, otherwise. The planners who failed to protect this piece of history are the same ones who approved the diversion of a Roman road through a housing estate, aren't they? So why am I not surprised? I expect the Romans would be if they found out. Eric Horn, Sussex Street, Winchester.
Now from John Holder, Memories of Sir Alec in Winchester. Sir, this month marks the centenary of the birth of the great actor Sir Alec Guinness. For many years he owned a house in Colebrook Place, now my bed and breakfast house, Wolvesey View, but then The Haven. He bought the house for his mother, Agnes de Cuff. I would be grateful if anyone with memories of Sir Alec in Winchester or of his mother, Mrs. Guinness, could get in touch with me on 01962 852 082. That's 01962 852 082, and that's from John Holder in Colebrook Place in Winchester.
This letter comes from Brian Espina, Chandler Road, Abbots Barton, and it's entitled "Our City is Where It Ought to Be." Sir, several months ago, you ran a letter from me expressing my surprise at seeing Winchester on the weather map of South today for the first time since I started living in Winchester in 1975. It also expressed my hope that this might spread to the occasional intro and or outro to the programme. Perhaps the editors of South Today read the Chronicle and take notice of what it is said, and as they should, of course, or it might be just coincidental. Whatever, Winchester is now on the map, at the start of every broadcast, where it ought to be, which could indicate a victory for the Chronicle. Brian Espiner.
Karen Barrett's letter laments the omission of a new bus station. Go back to the drawing board. Sir, the Silver Hill scheme has been 20 years in the planning. We've had ups and downs, controversies, arguments over design, developers going bust, and legal action over compulsory purchase orders. Finally, it looked as though things were getting started when Henderson, the current developer, published its amended design. Since then, there's been nothing but anger from the public over the omission of a new bus station and outrage at the proposed reduction in affordable housing. Now, a row has broken out between Stagecoach, Henderson, and Winchester City Council. Nobody appears to agree on where the bus route should go and, more worryingly, seem confused as to what has been agreed already. Coupled with Hampshire County Council's threatened cuts to bus services and possible changes in conditions of use of the senior bus pass, the future looks bleak for those of us who rely on public transport. Sadly, most of the decision makers don't. If we want to encourage people to leave their cars at home, the provision of a new bus station and a detailed plan of bus access and routes should have been the starting point of the design for Silver Hill, not some afterthought argued about at such a late stage. The city should tell Henderson and Stagecoach to go back to the drawing board and sort it out. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Winchester.
And now from Keith Story, Legal Implications of A34 Diversion. Sir, many readers have rightly questioned the irresponsible decisions of Carla Holmes and city planners not to reverse plans to divert Andover Road through the Barton Farm Estate. The weak excuse is that it's too late to ignore precedents for late changes. The proposed redevelopment of Winchester City Centre, the Silver Hill scheme, was initially sold on the basis of it providing 297 new homes and a new bus station. Recent revisions will result in only 180 homes and no bus station at all. Also, building the Inner Ring Road was stopped after many homes along Sussex Street had already been demolished to accommodate it. Obviously, this is a plan to divert Andover Road, which can be changed, but it may require more aggressive opposition. Did the city planners exercise due diligence in approving a scheme which is flawed as a result of deviating from the normal practice of separating pedestrians and cyclists from through traffic? This decision also ignored pleas from residents and advice from experts to reconsider redirecting a main road through a housing estate. Perhaps a complaint to the local government ombudsman for maladministration might persuade the city council. The developer, Carla Holmes, may also be vulnerable to challenge. Might Carla be liable if someone at Barton Farm was injured in a road accident? After all, many people have warned about the risks of diverting a main road through a housing estate. Yet Carla has still put forward such plans and then stubbornly refused to change them. If I were a director of Carla Holmes, I'd be nervous about the future changes of corporate manslaughter. I admit a personal agenda. As a pedestrian, I'd been run over. As a cyclist, my best friend was killed by a lorry. And as a motorist, I nearly killed two pedestrians who stepped off a Winchester pavement without looking. I'd like to minimise such incidents. And that's from Keith Storey of St Cross, Winchester.
This letter comes from David Farthing, who is Winchester Rotary Club. And it's headed, Tools That Can Give Africans a Living. Sir, Winchester Rotary would like to thank your readers who, some years ago, in response to a letter which was kindly published, donated used tools and sewing machines for refurbishing by Tools for Self-Reliance, which is titled TFSR, and sending to Africa. The need continues to be urgent. TFSR volunteers carry out the refurbishment of the tools in their well-equipped workshops at Netley Marsh prior to dispatch to their partner organisations in Africa. Most importantly, they visit regularly to ensure that their African partners are working efficiently and that the refurbished tools are continuing to help artisans and trainees to earn a living. TFSR welcome donations of good quality tools, sewing machines, machines for woodworking, metalworking, all building trades, shoe repairing and tailoring, and especially in demand are hand-driven round bobbin Singer sewing machines. Tools for Self-Reliance, for whom I am a registered collector, are one of the many worldwide charities supported by Rotary. If you think that you may have tools or sewing machines that are suitable for refurbishing and sending to Africa, please call me on 01962 856038, or you could email me at davidfarthing123@btinternet.com. That letter, as you heard, was from David Farthing.
This letter comes from the Cockersill family and is titled Candidates Must Make Views Clear. Sir, we hear a lot about localism and about how decisions should be made by councils because they are close to the people they represent. It would be helpful for voters in the forthcoming local elections to know where their councillors stand on building a new leisure centre. As concerned residents of Hyde with two young children who enjoy the amenity of the recreation ground, we call upon all election candidates, especially all those representing the people of Hyde, to state clearly whether or not they oppose building on any part of the existing recreation ground and whether or not they support Save the Wrecks campaign for a fuller consideration of alternative redevelopment plans. There has so far been a lot of obfuscation, lack of clarity and dubious process with regards to this issue, a truly local issue that arouses strong sentiments and opinions among local people. What happens now matters to us, our children, and potentially our children's children. We call upon local candidates to make their positions clear so we, the voters, can decide who truly represents our views. Peter and Angie Cockesell and Dylan 10 and John 7, Victoria Road, Hyde, Winchester.
Devastation of an ancient forest. Sir, the devastation of Harewood Forest, one of Hampshire's ancient woodlands, is taking place right now. Countless oak trees are being callously chainsawed into oblivion. Thousands of creatures, great and small, are homeless and their biosphere devastated. How is it, when we bemoan the disappearance of tropical rainforests, that closer to home such destruction of our environment is allowed? It should be regarded as a crime against humanity, an outrageous act of mutilation, an ecosystem enslaved, assimilated, and mutilated for the greed of man. Who allows such an act? And that's from Ford Bacon of Newton Stacey, Stockbridge.
Looking back, we begin now with the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Michael.
200 years ago, April the 25th, 1814, and it's headed Horror of the Paris Battlefield. By private letters from France, we learn that Bonaparte is to have, out of the £240,000 assigned to him and his family, one-fourth for himself and his court on the island of Elba, of which he is to be the sovereign prince. According to private accounts, nothing could be more frightful than the spectacle near Paris after the Battle of the 30th Ault. Thousands of dead and wounded men were left in all directions, and for many days they lay unburied and unassisted. For 3 months previously, valuables of all kinds have been sent away from Paris, not only by orders of Bonaparte, but by individuals. The next piece goes to Nottingham. We are sorry to state that a spirit of insubordination has begun to be again manifested in the neighbourhood of Nottingham. Threatening letters have been sent to some of the most respectable hosiers, and Saturday's Gazette offers the Prince Regent's pardon and a reward of 200 guineas for the discovery and apprehension of 5 or 6 persons disguised in flannel shirts who early in the morning of the 4th inst broke into the shop of Mr. Morley of Greasley in the county of Nottingham and destroyed several stocking frames with the work that was on them.
These two items come from 100 years ago, April the 25th, 1914. And the first, dust cloud over Otterbourne. Sir, riding here from here to Chandler's Ford and returning by the main road, I never before encountered such dust as there was last Wednesday afternoon, April the 15th. Standing on the top of Shawford Hill and looking down towards Otterbourne, there was a tunnel of dust through which cars, bicyclists and pedestrians proceeded. The stream of motor cars was so continuous that the dust of one could not be dispersed before another car created a fresh supply. And it is a state of things which bids fair to become prevalent throughout the country on all our main roads. And the second item, flaunting their drunkenness in the face of God, was the description given at a vestry meeting on Wednesday night by the Reverend F.J. Taylor, Vicar of St. Luke's, Nottingham, to some of the couples who come to his church in a state of intoxication to be married. He said that one woman was so lost to all sense of decency on the day before Easter Sunday that she danced down the aisle. He would much prefer that they went to a registry office to get married.
And now, 50 years ago, on April the 25th, 1964, cost of vandals and litter louts. Willful damage of public property and indiscriminate dumping of rubbish throughout the countryside are two of the greatest problems confronting local authorities up and down the country. Young vandals on the one hand and the litter lout on the other are costing the nation a frightening bill each year, in which the county of Hampshire is no exception. Open spaces, roadside lay-bys, the beaches and the rivers are regular recipients of household debris of every description. No longer pots and pans, but broken washing machines and discarded refrigerators. The perennial difficulty, however, is to find a solution. Some want better police patrols, others advocate local vigilantes, and there's a nebulous plea for the education of the public. And the second item, the prospective Conservative candidate for the Winchester Division, Rear Admiral Morgan Giles, met the Alresford electors for the first time when he addressed a meeting in the town hall on Wednesday. He said that as a candidate he was very keen to have a by-election, but there was the expense to be taken into account. Over £2,000 of taxpayers' money. The successful candidates would only sit in Parliament for 7 or 8 weeks and then would follow a general election with same expense again.
This letter is from 25 years ago, April 28th, 1989, and it all sounds very familiar. IBM expansion plans for Hursley. Proposal for a major expansion of IBM's research centre at Hursley were due to go before the city planners yesterday, which was Thursday. The computer giant is seeking outline permission for some 33,000 square metres of new offices and laboratories close to the listed Hursley Park House. The company say it would enable them to increase their existing workforce of 2,300 by 800 over the next 10 years. Planning officers, local councillors and residents of Hursley are all concerned about the traffic implications of such a large-scale development for an already congested and dangerous junction. The next piece says that Southern England faces a chronic shortage of housing, a housing expert has warned this week. Mr. Jim Coulter, director of the National Federation of Housing Associations, said high prices meant that many people couldn't get into the property or onto the property ladder. And in many parts of Hampshire and along the south coast, growing numbers of people were being placed in bed and breakfast accommodation by local authorities because they had no option. Mr. Coulter attacked the housing benefit scheme as totally inadequate. Each year since 1983, the system has become more mean and diminutive in its scope and coverage, he says.
We go on to editorial comment, please, Maria, followed by first person, Michael.
Thank you.
Editorial comment, keeping local people on song. The ambitious expansion of one of the South's biggest music festivals was always going to ruffle feathers. But people living in Twyford have been shocked to learn of a plan to divert hundreds of coaches and campervans throughout their country roads en route to this summer's Boomtown Festival. Villagers have branded the proposals desperately unsafe. Boomtown organisers want to see 75 coaches and up to 750 campervans directed from the M3 through Twyford and onwards to Matterley Bowl for the August event. The plan is to divert them through Twyford onto Hazley Road, through Morstead and past Oslebury to the A272. It has been well documented that festival officials hope to increase the number of visitors from 30,000 last year to 38,000 this year, with a further increase to 45,000 next year and 49,999 in 2016. But what has upset locals is the apparent lack of information relayed to them about this year's diversion plans. It's clear disruption will grow as the festival grows. It's clear ways need to be found to better manage traffic for the benefit of festival goers and locals alike. But what is also clear is that local people must be engaged in any decision making that affects their daily lives.
This piece is by George Hayter. How many tins of baked beans can you fit in a kitchen cupboard? The answer is 72, if your kitchen cupboards are the same size as the ones in our house. I should know because under the tea towels drawer, I've just stacked every 420-gram can of beans that I could cram. There's room for six tins across, six deep and two high, which by my maths adds up to six dozen. I justify my doomsday policy of stockpiling food by recalling the arrival of Waitrose in Chandler's Ford. Before that branch of the upmarket grocer could be built a decade or so ago, the company went through a bitter planning dispute. Hundreds of protesters filled a church for a marathon meeting with Waitrose representatives shouted down again and again by residents. After councillors eventually voted for the controversial scheme, you might think Waitrose would have wanted things to quieten down. Instead, they chose to go through the planning process once again just because they wanted a minor modification to the original plans. They decided they wanted the store to have a slightly smaller warehouse than was shown on the approved drawings. So they applied for planning permission all over again, and it was with the reduced storage space that the supermarket was eventually built. That determination by companies to minimise their stock and the expensive facilities for storing it is summed up in the business jargon as just in time. From factory to shop, everyone in the supply chain can increase profits by reducing the cash they have tied up in storage. So firms use computers in a bid to order replacement stock only when they are about to run out. Often that means they need to have the replacement stuff next day. There's not much room for anything to go wrong in the risky world of just in time. Anything from strikes to storms can stop replacement items being manufactured or transported. Blockades of fuel depots in recent years had the same alarming effect, closing down UK petrol stations in days. Political crises and overseas conflict can magnify shortages to a global scale. With less food on sale, you can rely on mass panic buying to whip up hunger hysteria. If that happens, we're helpless. Most of us are non-agricultural townies these days, dependent on food being brought from beyond Hampshire and often from another continent. Call me gloomy, but I'm sure it's a matter of time, of when and not if our modern just-in-time economics will stumble. The government, quite rightly, has some emergency plans for extreme events, but in the era of just-in-time, every householder would be wise to have their own safety net. Mine is a cupboard full of non-perishable food for when the supermarket shelves turn bare. You don't have to like beans. You could stock your emergency cupboard with caviar and champagne.
Dear, a bit doom-laden. Well, we go on with an alternative view of the news. Belgarum. We have a couple of some bits. Maria.
Sheep will safely graze beneath the solar panels. Belgaram's keen to prove we were not trying to pull the wool over Rita's eyes by asserting that sheep will graze at the newly completed solar farm on the edge of Alsford. South Wanston energy expert James Anderson took issue with our recent report, in which we briefly masticated over whether or not the development was a shining example of versatile 21st century arable farming. His nub was that it was disingenuous to imply that the land could have dual uses, both creating energy and sating ruminant mammals' hunger pangs. You can have a solar crop as food, or you can have it as electricity, but you can't have both, he said. Mr. Anderson thought there would be only room for a few occasional four-legged strimmers, as there will be little grass because it will always be in the shade of the panels. So in between thumbing through his sparky newsletter, Electricity and the Ballot Box, and ordering the newsroom Easter Sunday roast lamb lunch online while the editor's back was turned, Belgaram sought clarification from the landowner. Bill Coles wasn't remotely sheepish on the matter. "Yep, we're going to have loads of the beggars, several hundred in fact," he said. "The only reason they're not there already is because the water pipes to give them something to drink haven't been laid yet."
And zoo reverses rebrand. Marwell Zoo spent a lot of time and money rebranding as Marwell Wildlife a few years ago. Everything was changed from the stationery to the brown traffic signs on the M3. It did seem a slightly strange move, especially as the 40-year-old zoo has one of the strongest brands in Hampshire. Recently, those brown signs have been rebranded back to Zoo. Belgaram asks why. A spokesman replied, "We've reverted back to calling the zoological park Marwell Zoo. However, the charity which runs it remains as Marwell Wildlife. Therefore, our conservation work still comes under Marwell Wildlife." That's clear then. It was probably something to do with the fact that everyone knows what a zoo called Marwell Zoo is, but perhaps not quite so many know what Marwell Wildlife is about.
Cycle commuters fall off. A lot of effort has gone into promoting cycling in Winchester in recent years, but nowhere near enough, according to the Green Party, citing figures from the 2011 census. The proportion of people cycling to work between 2001 and 2011 has remained at just 1.9%. But according to the Greens, it could have been worse. Some areas have seen the number of cycling commuters plummet by as much as 30%. Portsmouth and Southampton were the only two local authorities which saw an increase. But Rushmore has had a 30% decline, while Hart had a 23% drop. In Winchester, the figures are 1,012 cyclists in 2001 and 1,103 in 2011, an increase of 91, or 9%. But as a proportion of the workforce, it is static. In Eastleigh, the proportion of cyclists has dropped from 2.8% to 2.5%, and in the Test Valley, the drop is from 2.9% to 2.8%. Much more work to be done.
Here are some events that you might be interested in that are coming up in the next few weeks. On Thursday the 1st of May at the Hampshire Record Office, there's an Evening with Hilliers to celebrate the 150th anniversary of Hillier Nurseries. There'll be talks by Jean Hillier and Andrew McKindo, archive displays and light refreshments. The time is 6:30 for 7 p.m. Tickets are £8 and booking is essential. And to book, you can telephone this number, 01962 846 154. That's 01962 846 154. The Winchester Chamber Music Festival is on from the Thursday the 1st to Sunday the 4th of May. The London Bridge Ensemble is giving 8 concerts at Winchester Discovery Centre and St Lawrence Church in the Square. Details and tickets are available by telephoning the Discovery Centre on 01962 873 603. That's 01962 873 603. At the Chesil Theatre, from the 10th to the 17th of May, you can see the play The Price by Arthur Miller, directed by Tom Williams, a talking news presenter, and my husband. It also features Noel Thorpe Tracy, who often reads for us and manages the Talking Magazine. And also it has Maria here, who's read with us for the first time. So we're well represented. There's a matinee on the 17th of May, as well as all the evening performances. Tickets are £10 or £12 and can be obtained online from the Chesil Theatre website, or you can ring the theatre's agents on 0333 666 3366. That's 0333 666 3366. There is a small extra charge on both types of booking. And don't forget that the Winchester Talking News AGM is on Tuesday the 6th of May at the Littleton Millennium Hall at 2 p.m. We look forward to seeing you there. Lighting Up Time ends today, the 25th of April, at 5:50 a.m. and begins again at 8:17 p.m. On Wednesday the 30th of April, it ends at 5:41 a.m. and begins at 8:25 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. 01962 870370. And we continue with further items of general news.
There are 3 very good photographs heading this piece, which show pictures of the street passion play, which was held in Alresford this year on Good Friday. Modern dress, very stylish, and a picture of an audience enwrapped at the end. Street passion play, it says as a heading, has real impact. As Jesus was nailed to the cross, a silence fell across a market town, causing many onlookers to weep silently. Thank God It's Friday, which is a modern rendition of the Easter presentation of the Passion Play, was performed in Alresford on Good Friday in front of around 300 people, telling the story of the last days of Jesus Christ, his crucifixion, and those who betrayed him. Jesus, who was played by Richard Padgett, was dressed rather unusually in jeans and a T-shirt for his moment with Pontius Pilate, while a news correspondent and a cameraman fed the story of Jesus' last moments to a heckling crowd in Broad Street. Director Rosie Waring-Green said the team, made up of singers, actors and dancers, had been rehearsing for about 5 weeks. It's the third time the play has been performed in the town, which was last shown 10 years ago. I think it went brilliantly, she said. It's probably the best one we did. It was very moving and very emotional, and at the end no one wanted to move. They were so captivated by the story. Laura Brill, who helped organise the piece, added, Rosie was asked to do this by the 3 churches in Alresford, made up of Anglican, Methodist and Catholic, to spread the Christian message and the true meaning of Easter. We wanted people to stop in the street and to do something that brought together the whole community.
We have lots to bleat about, says Farm. A Winchester farm has been celebrating another successful lambing season. Beechcroft Farm said it had been a chaotic few weeks. The farm, which also runs a shop in Sarum Road, rears, produces and sells lamb, beef and pork, and last year won a top local Best Farm Shop award. The business, which newlywed Rachel Waldron runs with her parents, Joy and Nick Waldron, has been part of the family since the 1930s and this year greeted 340 lambs, unusually including two sets of quads to their well-established flock of almost 300. Rachel said, "We pride ourselves on being a high welfare farm and we have worked really hard to get them pregnant and in good health. We like to make sure that the lambs arrive safely and are looked after properly when they are born. We are very lucky that we have a nice big shed and we can bring them all in and we basically live with them 24 hours a day. We don't employ extra people at lambing time, so Mum, Dad and myself take it in shifts. Organisation is clearly important in the lambing process and keeping track of hundreds of animals at a time is no mean feat." Rachel explained, "Sometimes, if we have more than one lambing at the same time, the sheep try to steal one of the lambs from each other. So if we're there, we know whose is whose. Every sheep has an individual marking. If they are blue, that means they are twins. If it's green, it means they are single." She added, "A sense of humour and patience are the two most important things to have, and lots of coffee and chocolate, of course." And there's a lovely picture of the Waldron family with three gorgeous lambs, and they do all look very different.
MP calls for schools' strict holiday rules to be relaxed. Parents of younger children should be given more freedom to go on holiday during term time, a Hampshire MP said. Steve Bryan, the Winchester MP, broke ranks to call for ultra-strict rules to be relaxed for children aged 6 and under. The Conservative MP criticised his own government for meddling in this area by banning head teachers from allowing any breaks outside the allotted school holidays. Mr. Bryan said, "Although we know that school attendance is important, we also know that parents are not daft. A constituent of mine, a governor at primary school in Winchester, said to me that the changes to the rules were an insult to his intelligence and discretion, as he'd never dream of taking a child out of school at a crucial time. I find it perplexing that a Conservative government is meddling in this area, full stop. But we should think especially about the early years, reception and year one. Do we really need to come down on the head teachers and question their integrity in this way, which we appear to be doing?" The comments came amid growing public anger about the soaring cost of going away during school holidays, with firms accused of profiteering. More than 100,000 people signed an e-petition calling for a cap on increases compared with term times and triggering a Commons debate. In response, Education Secretary Michael Gove criticised holiday companies which ramped up their prices, urging them to look in the mirror. However, Mr. Gove strongly defended new guidelines issued last year that removed the discretion for heads to allow a maximum of 10 days absence during the school year, and he said, "It's wrong to take children out of school when they should be at school, because it's important that we should make sure that children learn." Instead, the government has argued the solution is the new power for individual schools to stage holidays at different times. Mr. Gove added, "Schools now have the freedom to change their term times in order to allow students and families and the opportunity to go on holiday at different times. Academies have the power to set their own term dates, but the Education Secretary said he wanted all schools to have the same flexibility."
This piece is accompanied by two jolly photographs, and it's all to do with Thomas the Tank Engine. Here's the fat controller surrounded by some children in his top hat and his yellow waistcoat, really looking the part. The piece is called Thomas Comes to Life for Fans. It was the biggest moment of the year for young fans of Thomas the Tank Engine. Families travel from as far afield as Japan for a chance to ride on Britain's most famous steam engine and his friends at Mid-Hants Railway Watercress Line in Alsford. There was also a chance to shake hands with the fat controller and let off steam in a picnic area with bouncy slide, magic show and children's roundabout. But the greatest thrill of all was to board Thomas and experience a ride on a real steam engine. There were also rides on Toad the Brake Van and Diesel. The big steam trains puffed and whistled through the Hampshire countryside between Alsford and Alton. Georgina and Mark Botterill from Springfield Close, Coldon Common, took their toddler William, who is nearly two. Mrs. Botterill said, "It's been a great day out. I don't know how much William will remember, but he's loved it." 3-year-old Alfie Hutchinson was another big fan, and his dad, Wayne, a gardener, said, "The kids see Thomas on the telly, and all of a sudden, it's real life. It's brilliant."
Sci-fi fans feel the force at Science Centre. May the force be with you. Winchester Science Centre and Planetarium was invaded by characters from Star Wars during the Easter holiday. Crowds of noisy children playing on the hands-on exhibits fell silent as Darth Vader, stormtroopers and rebel pilots marched in. But there was no battle scenes. Instead, members of the 501st UK garrison happily posed for pictures with fans of all ages. Among them was 4-year-old William McConaughey, who shook hands with Darth Vader. His mum, Ruth McConaughey, a nurse, said Darth Vader is William's hero. He loves him. He's been following him around all afternoon. And there is a picture with Darth Vader at the centre, surrounded by Star Wars characters. And Michael Jeffcoat and his children, Jennifer, George and Edward.
Midwives reach out to help Ugandans. RHCH team will provide training and equipment. Midwives from the Royal Hampshire County Hospital will be setting off to Uganda to provide life-saving drugs and training. The group of 15 midwives and student operating department practitioners, ODPs, will spend 2 weeks in the poverty-stricken country in July to teach local midwives vital skills and provide women with medical packs they need to give birth safely. The group held a fun day at the Velmore Community Centre in Chandos Ford to help raise money towards the trip. The event included face painting, a raffle, the bouncy castle, magician and stars of the day, and the minions from Disney's Despicable Me. Laura Aspinall, team leader, wife, midwife at Royal Hants County Hospital and avid fundraiser for Basingstoke Holmer Partnership for Health, said the work is so important to improve the delivery of healthcare and boost birth survival rates. She said, "We provide training and support for people and teach them to provide safer care for the people of Uganda. We work with the staff in the Hoima Referral Hospital and with traditional birth attendees. They deliver women in the community in the rural areas of Africa and are non-qualified. They're very good, but we try and help them out with clinics and teach them skills for early referral for mums who need midwives in a hospital setting. The group will also be handing out mama packs containing vital drugs, sterile gloves, clean blades, sterile cord clamps and hygiene equipment. They cost £2 to put together." Miss Aspinall said, "It's so rewarding to see how much work we can do just by giving up 2 weeks of our time and the cost of a flight. I get such a buzz out of it. When you give money online, you don't always see the good it does, and it can be taxed. But when you work there yourself, you can see the benefits firsthand." Amy Flowers is one of the student midwives taking the trip. She said, "I'm really excited. I never thought I'd do something like this. It's going to be an amazing experience.
And there's a very colourful photograph of these ladies waiting to go out with balloons and all sorts of things, and a load of families at the back waving and laughing, and children.
Wildlife at risk from walkers. National Trust rangers in the New Forest are concerned that visitors to the Bramshaw Commons are jeopardising its wildlife. Rangers and volunteers have spent a lot of time at Foxbury this winter working towards establishing key habitats that they hope will support important species. With early signs of positive recovery at this site of conservation, they are keen to safeguard the future of the site for generations to come. The team are set to ramp up species surveys undertaken in recent years and continue to monitor populations as part of their work. We will be surveying these recovering landscapes for reptiles such as the adder, birds such as the nightjar and woodlark, as well as numerous butterflies and more, said a spokesman. The site, once a commercial conifer plantation, has seen a lot of changes in recent years, and the Trust is working hard to develop the heathland landscapes that would have once prevailed. Recent surveys indicate a good recovery of some key species, but we need to work to protect these at this early stage so that they will proliferate, the spokesman added. Rangers say they've been saddened to see some visitors continue to visit without invitation. First and foremost, this is a fragile site of conservation. It is a private enclosure and not part of the open commons, which are open to access for all. Rangers therefore urge people to respect this, to allow the site to flourish. Visitors who jump the gates are risking the recolonisation of key New Forest species here. Often we are told by locals that dogs are off lead during ground nesting bird season, which can be devastating for the populations at Foxbury. With the stunning landscapes across the Bramshaw Commons, we hope that regular visitors will enjoy these open access areas and only visit Foxbury during open days. Community ranger Michelle Baxter added, "We are looking forward to inviting people in through the summer to see our progress. This programme of open days allows them to see a conservation project firsthand, and the staff and volunteers will be able to show off all their hard work. Whilst access is by invitation only, to allow habitats and wildlife to re-establish, we welcome the opportunity for people to come and enjoy the site during these open days. We feel this strikes the right balance between recreation and conservation, but it does need to be carefully managed."
This article is written by Ali Kefford. Conference tells the untold stories of World War One. One of Winchester's great untold stories about how the city filled its spare rooms and cellars with First World War soldiers is set to take centre stage at a major archaeology conference this weekend. Dr. Phil Marter's lecture will focus on the huge Mourn Hill transit camp where 700,000 US soldiers, half of all those who served on the Western Front, stayed before being sent to mainland Europe. A total of 2 million troops passed through the camp during the war, most only staying for a few days, with around 50,000 there at any one time once it was fully operational. It was set up in the autumn of 1914, with military personnel still sleeping in tents when bitter winter weather swept in, to prevent many succumbing to pneumonia. Patriotic Winchester folk flung open their doors and took the men in, stashing them to sleep wherever space could be found. The city had a population of about 30,000 in 1914, and yet up to 20,000 men were found temporary billets that winter, said Dr. Marter. The First World War had much more impact on Winchester than the Second. Lots of tradesmen were drafted in to build the camp, and then many shops sold food and other goods to it. Some buildings at the bottom of St. Giles Hill, near the Chesil Rectory, were demolished to make the junction wider for military vehicles. Social history is very important. It's part of Winchester's story. Dr. Marta and his team have excavated part of the camp, situated either side of the Alsford Road, near to St. Swithin's School, unearthing parts of the cinema built to entertain troops there. The Winchester Archaeology and Memory Conference, organised by Winchester Excavations Committee, Winchester College and the City's University, takes place at the Sparkford Road campus this Saturday and Sunday. This is the most thoroughly excavated city in Britain, and the finds among the most fully recorded, said Dr. Simon Roffey, conference organiser and reader in medieval archaeology at the university. The aim of this two-day multidisciplinary conference is to make a wider reading of the city's archaeology through the lenses of history, art, architecture, literature, memory, and the processes of archaeology itself. Topics will include the excavations of England's earliest medieval hospital, Iron Age Winchester, King Alfred, as well as the city's place in a wider national and international context.
Gazebo launch for nursing home. A nursing home is celebrating after the official launch of a new garden gazebo. The Flower Down Nursing Home in Harestock Road, Winchester, is partnered with Sainsbury's, which helped develop the garden for the residents, which is now in its third stage of development. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Ernie Jeffs, and the Mayoress, Barbara Jeffs, attended the official opening and Easter party last Saturday, which including Easter bonnet making, a bookstall, and tea and cake. Milan Andrews, PR Ambassador for Winchester City Centre, Sainsbury's, said, "It was nice to have the residents and their families there to celebrate making the garden a much nicer place to be." The garden has had a new pond, wheelchair height flower beds, and now the gazebo to encourage residents to use the space in all weather conditions. And there's a very nice picture of the gazebo with Colin Kimber, Sharon Tucker, Barbara and Councillor Ernie Jeffs, Mayor of Winchester, with Mel Andrews from Sainsbury's at the opening of the Flower Down Nursing Home's new garden gazebo.
This piece is accompanied by an interesting photograph of a young runner in training, running round the statue of King Alfred at the bottom of Winchester High Street. It's headed Marathon Show to Raise Awareness. Incredible story of a teacher from Colden Common who is running five marathons in 5 days for charity around Winchester, raising more than £2,000 in the process. Joe Riley, who is 26 of New Road, took on the mammoth task for Cardiac Risk in the Young, which is a fund which has the acronym of CRY, CRY, a charity that helps those affected by sudden arrhythmic death syndrome. The English teacher started each day at one of his favourite pubs in Winchester on the course that took him through each of the five city gates. The first, last Wednesday, was St James Tavern, followed by the Black Boy, the Eclipse Inn, the Wickham Arms, and from the Square Brewery in Petersfield to the Bishop on the Bridge in Winchester. It comes after the death of Alex Watley in 2011 at the age of 23. Mr. Riley knew Alex from their time at Peter Simmons College. Mr. Riley said, "I think the thing that I have been trying to say to people is that I have not been personally affected by the syndrome, but I know a lot of people that have. and Alex is just one of the many young people that have passed away that didn't necessarily have to. The challenge wasn't the first time Mr. Riley has attempted such a mammoth feat. In July last year, he completed 4 marathons in 4 days and raised £800 for CRY. I aim to continue to raise funds and awareness for and about this cause, he added.
And on a very different note, in search of the paranormal, a Winchester pub is set to welcome ghost hunters again next month. At more than 1,000 years old, the Royal Oak in St George's Street is one of the oldest pubs in Britain, dating back to 1002. It first opened as a pub during the mid-15th century. Now, paranormal investigators will be going in search of spooky happenings on May the 10th, after an ex-Winchester University student, Graham Crabb, claimed a spirit latched onto him there 4 years ago whilst he was filming a project. The team of 4, part of Ghost Quest UK, will investigate, and co-founder Anne Lutie said they have been looking forward to it for some time. She said the landlord has said we could go back for the investigation, but only if we brought a medium this time, because he didn't want us to stir anything up and bring on aggressive spirits.
Airport plans won't affect us, says Parrish. Villagers in Uslesbury say they are relaxed about plans to expand a small airport in North Hampshire. Farnborough Airport has plans to double the size of its operation to 50,000 flights a year. As reported 2 weeks ago, the airport hopes to increase its controlled airspace to a similar size to that of Gatwick. Residents living east of Winchester in Alresford, the South Downs and the Etchin Valley have opposed these plans, with many stating the increase could result in nearly double the number of aircraft, creating noise pollution. But council members said the move would not create much more air traffic than parishioners already experienced. Parish chairman John Chapman said, "I don't actually think there's much we can do here, given that we have 3 international airports close by to us. We get already and get high-flying and low-flying aircraft anyway."
Sorry. Brewers team up to launch new beers. Lovely photograph of 2 dray horses and a vehicle carrying lots and lots of beer barrels. A pair of Winchester beer experts have opened their own brewery, believing their bitter will rival some of the best in Hampshire. Andy Mansell runs the New Rat Cat Brewery with... Andy Mansell runs the new Red Cat Brewery with partner Ian McIntosh, a former Cheriton Flowerpots brewer at a site in Winnell Business Park. Mr. Mansell formerly ran the Full Flood Arms and the Queen Inn in St. Cross, but says he's putting all his efforts into their new venture. "We felt there was still room for a decent pint in Hampshire," he said. "The brewery was going to have 3 pints from the start, and this is our first official pint after the first batch wasn't quite what we wanted. It wasn't quite perfect." The new Red Cat Bitter, with an alcohol by volume of 3.7%, was sold for the first time last Friday at the Full Flood Arms on Cheriton Road, the Bell Inn in St. Cross and the Queen Inn on Kingsgate Street. "The next one we're going to put together is called Tomcat, which will be on a 4.7% and will be a lovely golden ale. And then, later on in the year, we'll release the Prowler Pale, which will be a 3.6%. The 12-barrel brewery relies heavily on a slightly different fermentation process, giving the beer a more fizzy quality. By allowing air into the system, the bitter has a good conditioning," Mr. Mansell added. "We've had people tripping over themselves telling us how much they like it." Andy's father, Clive, has taken over the running of the Full Flood Arms and the Queen Inn.
Oxfam Bookshop celebrates 25 years. They've been selling second-hand books and music for a quarter of a century, and during that time have raised $1.6 million to help the world's poorest communities. Oxfam Books and Music in Winchester celebrated its 25th birthday with a party for the volunteers who have worked there over the years. During the party, guest of honour, Winchester-based explorer and travel writer John Pilkington, whose talks have raised £2,160 for the Parchment Street shop, presented many of the volunteers with long service awards to celebrate their dedication to the shop. Among them was Sonia Meldrum, who has volunteered since it opened in 1989, the same year she retired from her job of 20 years as a social worker. The 87-year-old grandmother of five from Berwick said, "I love handling old books, and I've always had second-hand books since I was a teenager. There's always that feeling that you never know when something interesting or valuable will turn up." Veronica Raymond, Oxfam's area manager for Hampshire, said, "It is so successful because of the fantastic team here, including good management and volunteers. I would just like to thank every person that's made it so successful." And there's a lovely picture of John Pilkington cutting the celebratory ribbon, surrounded by a crowd of smiling volunteers.
Pair ready to stand up for young people. Two young people are beginning their roles representing Hampshire's youth. Amelia Wrigley, 16, from Winchester, and Alex Maynard, 20, from Gosport, were chosen from among 38 young people who bid for the 12-monthly voluntary role. Seven were shortlisted for interview by the panel, which included two of Hampshire's Youth Parliament members, Sam Longmore and Zoni Asif, and Councillor Ray Bolton, Chairman of the County's Children and Young People Select Committee. They were impressed by Alex and Amelia's enthusiasm and their commitment to voicing the aspirations and attitudes of their peers. Amelia, who is head girl at King's School in Winchester, said, "I hope to effectively voice the opinions of Hampshire's young people and increase youth engagement with the decisions that affect us." Alex, previously a member of the Youth Parliament for Hampshire, mirrored those sentiments, saying, "I look forward to the challenges involved and helping to enable young people to have a say." Amelia is a student at Peter Simmons College, and Alex is currently studying for a degree in the International Relations at Portsmouth University. They will continue their studies alongside their new roles.
County chiefs reject living wage request. County bosses have rejected a bid to raise the living standards of thousands of workers across Hampshire. Eastleigh Borough Council and Southampton City Council have already introduced the so-called living wage, designed to reduce poverty as the cost of living soars. But the Conservative-led County Council said it would not follow this lead because county workers receive a good deal already and the wage boost would cost jobs. County leader Roy Perry said, "In short, Hampshire already offers a package which is better than the living wage. We offer benefits which are more generous than many employers, with elements such as pension, annual leave entitlement and sick pay, all above the statutory requirement. This means the total package on offer in Hampshire takes staff above the living wage. The hourly wage boost would have been to £7.45, compared to current minimum wage of £6.31. This is an hourly rate, and would have affected more than 4,000 staff, including cleaners, care workers and catering staff. But a report for the Employment in Hampshire County Council Committee warned it would not be without costs. It stated that the £1.5 million price tag of introducing it would squeeze out 71 jobs. Councillor Perry said, "The living wage would add cost to the county's wage bill and every school in Hampshire. This would generate upward pressure on the budget when we are looking for downward pressures. Any increase to the council's wage bill will mean more savings are needed across the organisation, which could lead to job losses. At a time of ongoing financial constraint, I want to be protecting people's jobs. But the wage boost rejection has drawn criticism from opposition politicians and the unions. Tim Cutter, branch secretary for Hampshire Unison, said, "I think it's disgraceful because other local authorities have signed up to the living wage in areas where the cost of living is much lower than Hampshire. The old argument that it will cost jobs was disproved with the introduction of the minimum wage." Liberal Democrat leader Keith Howes said, "I'm very disappointed that this idea, initially greeted with enthusiasm by all parties, has been ruled out by Hampshire Conservatives without even a discussion with its own staff. Evidence shows the living wage increases staff productivity and improves staff retention, reducing recruitment and training costs and saving organisations money over time, quite apart from improving quality of life and for some dependence on benefits."
Cuts threaten library services, says union. £900,000 savings needed due to government cuts. Library services in Hampshire will be left unsustainable after £900,000 of planned cuts, union bosses claim. Jobs, mobile libraries and branches are facing the chop as part of a £93 million cut to the county council budget. County chiefs say their hand has been forced by massive reductions in government grants. But Unison claimed the cuts, which are three times more than originally planned, are unnecessary because the council is sitting on about £400 million of reserves. Steve Squibbs, a local Unison rep, said, "Unison does not accept the case for cuts to public services, particularly in an authority that has reserves that are approaching £500 million. But even on their own terms, these cuts go way beyond what is necessary. If the cuts go ahead, they will result in a service that is unsustainable as staff struggle to maintain a quality service for the public. Libraries under threat of closure include Milford-on-Sea, but it is hoped volunteers will step forward as they did last year for libraries in North Baddesley and Stanmore. If no one comes forward, the libraries face closure. Mobile stops are to be slashed by nearly a third. Those under threat include 10 in Winchester, 6 in Eastleigh, 3 in Fareham, 8 in the Romsey area and 26 in the New Forest. The library outreach team, which promotes the use of the public library service to playgroups, schools and community groups, is also to be disbanded. A total of 27 full-time posts, which include HQ staff, library managers and outreach teams, face the axe. But Tory Recreation and Heritage Chief Keith Chapman vowed to maintain library services in the face of declining government financial support. He said, "Hampshire's Library and Information Service has examined a number of ways it might make savings going forward, considering what changes would impact the least on customers, while protecting what people value and need most from the Library and Information Service and ensuring it is in a strong position for the future. These proposals are designed to maintain and deliver a high-quality and flexible library service, enable the service to achieve the required savings and help make it more resilient in the future in the face of further government grant reductions. Plans include increasing library assistant hours, investing in e-books and e-audio titles, as well as self-service technology and introducing more convenient opening hours."
Dickie is backing church fundraiser. Former ITV sports presenter Dickie Davis is putting his weight behind a church fundraiser at Houghton. Dickie, pictured, and there's a nice picture of him here smiling, who fronted World of Sport on ITV for many years, is starting off competitors at the Houghton trial this Sunday, April the 27th.
The event, which starts at 10:15 a.m. from Village Hall, includes an 11-kilometre and 4-kilometre run and three challenges for cyclists. There, 32 kilometres, 14 kilometres and 5-kilometre routes round the village and neighbouring countryside. All cash raised will go towards All Saints Church in the village. Fiona Evans from the organising committee said, "This is a popular event which brings runners and cyclists from far and wide. Each year this event grows in fundraising and efficiency, which would not be possible without the amazing help we get from so many kind volunteers and generous contributors. It raises £3,000 for the church each year."
Dawn Chorus on the agenda. Early birds are sought by a Romsey Conservation Group. Tadbourne Meadows Conservation Volunteers is challenging all comers to celebrate National Dawn Chorus Day with them on Sunday, May the 4th. An expert on birdsong and calls will lead them along the stream and through the woods as the sun rises, identifying all the various birds as they wake up. There should be plenty of warblers and thrushes, and perhaps even a cuckoo, though these iconic birds are fast becoming a rarity in Hampshire. Those up for the challenge should meet at the eight acre entrance to the meadows at 5 a.m.
Vintage fashion show to aid witnesses. A vintage fashion show in aid of Winchester Crown Court's witness service will be held on May the 15th. Court staff are set to model designs from City Shop's Stardust Years and Vintage Hound to raise money for the charity, which has helped support those giving crucial evidence in criminal cases for over 20 years. Tickets costing £12 include a drink on arrival at the courthouse and can be bought by calling 01962 879591. That's 01962 879591. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. for guests to browse stores selling vintage items before the fashion show starts at 7:30.
Scout Hut set to be transformed at last. A new preschool will open in Winchester this year after council has approved plans for a new multi-use centre. The first Winchester Scout Hut in Fleming Road Week is used by around 190 youngsters every week and will now begin a £291,000 refurbishment after plans were finally approved. The hut will be re-roofed and get a new outer skin to stop it from leaking, be extended by about 20 feet and redesigned on the inside to make it appropriate for a preschool. The meeting heard from David Kesby, chairman of the First Winchester Scouts, who said the hut had been in desperate need of repair for almost 5 years and urged councillors to consider other opportunities a renovation would offer to the weak area. The facility has been used for over 50 years and this would mean it opening it up for the local community, he said. It would contribute to the social and economic fabric of the area. It would mean that 30 families could get their child into a preschool and go out to work. We teach the Scouts moral and social skills, and they go on to contribute greatly to their local area. Councillors debated on the need for a new preschool in Week and asked whether the noise implications on residents would be too great. The plans indicate that restrictions would be placed on outdoor playtime so as to remain in keeping with other schools in the area and keep noise to a minimum out of the usual play hours and reduce disturbance to neighbours. Councillor Michael Reed said the move would bring the community more opportunities. Noise will not, I think, be a vast problem, but it's a wonderful opportunity for not only the Scouts, but also the local community, he said. The plans were unanimously approved, and the work is due to start in May for completion by August.
Mayor's charities, shaken and stirred. The Guildhall in Winchester played host to the Mayor's charity fundraiser, the Ambassador's Ball, which this year had a James Bond theme. guests were greeted on the steps with displays of fire and stilt walkers from Manic Stage Productions, a juggler and mime artists. The glittering affair saw some of Hampshire's mayors attend, along with other special guests who danced the night away and made bids on the auction's items. Food was provided by Winchester restaurateur Miff Khayyam and his team. The ball was in aid of the mayor's charities, which are Hounds for Heroes, Countess Mountbatten Hospice, the Scouts and the Community Pot.
RHCH Clinic for Lyme sufferers to close. A groundbreaking Winchester clinic to help people with Lyme disease is set to close next month after only 6 months. The unique service was set up last summer by expert Matthew Dryden, a consultant microbiologist at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The clinic at the RHCH has helped some 120 people who have contracted the bacterial infection that spreads to people by infected ticks, frequently from animals in woodland. The disease can have serious consequences affecting skin, joints, heart and the nervous system. The clinic was funded as a pilot by the Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, but the Trust has been unable to agree permanent funding with Public Health England. Dr. Dryden said, "The clinic is closing, not because funding has been pulled, there never was any funding. The local Trust should be congratulated for hosting it. There has been a massive demand and a huge national need, and it is a huge disappointment that the powers that be have not reached an agreement. I was seeing people from across the UK. Dr. Dryden said the clinic may restart, but almost certainly not in Winchester. The South is a hot spot for Lyme disease because of the number of woods, the increase in housing in the countryside, and an increase in number of animals such as deer."
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editor, Tom Williams. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Michael Wyard.
Goodbye.
Maria Head.
Goodbye.
And Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams, goodbye. And do have a good week. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you.